is pretty grim, and it keeps getting grimmer. We saw, I think, last week what may well be a watershed moment for American democracy when the Secretary of Defense, Peter Hegseth, and the President of the United States, Donald Trump, stood up in front of 800 or so members of the top brass of the US military and effectively told them that members of the Defense Force could retaliate without consequences, that they could use cities like Chicago or Portland or Los Angeles as training grounds, and that they were effectively unconstrained by morality and would become, or could become, effectively an instrument of the Oval Office. I was reading in The Atlantic's daily newsletter today, Tom Nichols, who's not exactly a radical, wrote that soon top US military commanders may have to decide whether they will refuse such orders, illegal orders, from the commander-in-chief. The greatest crisis of American civil-military relations in modern history is now underway. So this is how serious things are. And of course, this has potentially severe consequences for American democracy, but it has very real consequences for the rest of the world too, as none of this is confined to the domestic United States. All of this is being projected outwards as the Trump administration deliberately dismantles the international rule of law and institutions of global governance. And the question then becomes, of course, what does this mean for the rest of the world? What does it mean in particular for traditional allies of the United States, like Australia? What does it mean if the American military becomes an instrument of the White House, unconstrained by morality or democratic accountability? And why is it that the Australian government seems to be doubling down on the alliance? And how has the alliance, given all that is unfolding in the United States, given that the world order is being remade as we watch, how is it that the alliance has become so focused only on submarines? And this, despite increasing evidence that the AUKUS nuclear-powered submarine pact is destined to fall over. And yet the Australian Labor government appears to remain pretty committed to this deal. And that's in the face, I think, of rising community concern. You know, polling by the Australia Institute indicates that the Australian community is not convinced. 54% of Australians now say they want a more independent foreign policy. Nearly 57% support or strongly support a parliamentary inquiry into the AUKUS submarine deal. So, where to now? Where do we go with all of this? Joining me today to discuss these questions and more are, as you can see on the screen, the Honourable Doug Cameron, the former senator from New South Wales from 2007 to 2019, representing the Australian Labor Party. Doug served as Parliamentary Secretary for Housing and Homelessness in the second Rudd government, and then was opposition shadow minister across the portfolios of Human Services, Skills, TAFE and Apprenticeships, and Housing and Homelessness. Doug retired from Parliament in 2019, but has stayed very active in Australian public life, championing progressive causes, including housing policy reform and the need for foreign policy independence. Arthur Roris, who is joining us from Crete to explain the darkness there, very kindly, all the way from Crete, is the secretary of the New South Wales South Coast Trades and Labour Council, which is a peak union body representing 25 affiliated unions from the Illawarra all the way to the Victorian border in the south. And in his role as secretary, he has been a leading campaigner for green jobs, for climate action, for a nuclear-free future, and the labour movement against AUKUS. Okay, so with all that, let's get stuck in. Doug, I thought I'd begin with you. We've heard news in the last couple of weeks that AUKUS will likely survive the Trump review, although it has gone on a lot longer than promised, and that will likely be formally announced around the time of that much-anticipated meeting between Prime Minister Albanese and President Trump. What do you make of it all? Were you surprised by this review?
No, absolutely not. I took the view that when you've got a mug, hold on to them. And Australia has just signed agreements that are terrible. They destroy our sovereignty. They make us nothing more than, a part of the US global position. I never had any doubt that AUKUS would be cancelled. I just thought it was too good a deal for the US to walk away from this.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you mentioned there, Doug, the question of sovereignty. Richard Marles, the defence minister, has argued a number of times, I think, that AUKUS actually enhances Australian sovereignty. But I'm guessing from your comments there that that's not how you see it. What do you think? What impact do you think that AUKUS does have on Australian sovereignty?
Well, it destroys our sovereignty. We have allowed the biggest military power in the world to set up a base or a number of bases in Australia. We had a long, proud tradition of opposing nuclear arms. We will now have nuclear submarines that are US with nuclear arms on board. We will have B-52 bombers, strike bombers capable of striking against China on our shores with nuclear arms. So how can this enhance our sovereignty? It's the most bizarre argument I've ever heard from any politician for a long time. You just cannot keep denying reality. A bad deal that we've signed, we lose our sovereignty, and we become nothing more than an appendage of US militarism.
Arthur, I think, the polling I mentioned earlier suggests that the community is at odds somewhat with the government position on this. That community concern mirrors the concerns that Doug just outlined. You've been working on the ground in your community a lot around AUKUS in particular. Is that what you're seeing in your community, a level of concern about this?
Well, very much so. I mean, this is a campaign in which the uni movement's playing a very big and leading role. But only recently there was a declaration from Port Kembla, from our key port in our area, signed by 41 community organisations, that it was instigated by those community organisations. It's showing that the people, again, are ahead of the government when it comes to those very real concerns. And those concerns extend across a range of areas. I mean, this is, in many ways, people see this as something that is unlikely to happen in the way that the governments project it to happen, but believe that it's even worse if it works. You know, this is one of those few things where it's unlikely to ever work, but it'll actually be worse if it does. So it puts us into a no-win situation, but it focuses the mind of the community on what happens on the ground. We hear the big picture strategic arguments about China and other things. The purpose has never been clear. It's more creep than mission, as we say, when you look at people like Trump and others. And people ask the question, well, what is it all for? What will it mean for my community? Is it as bad as just becoming nuclear targets? Is there more to it? Will we have access to our own land? Because we see what happens in other areas. The one big thing now, I guess, is the thing that's really hit home is are the events in the US, because people can see through this. Behind every government suggestion of, well, we play the long game, not just administration by administration, implying that Trump will go and then we'll return to normality. I think now, for the first time, people are starting to have real doubts as to what the real normal is, whether it has changed forever, and what happens if we're basically put into a compromised position during a Trump administration, given that he's now not even talking about defense, he's talking about offense. He's even renamed his department the Department of War. What does that mean for his strategic partners? And at the end of the day, the ultimate thing, I think the killer, really, for pardon the pun, for our community was seeing what's happening in Europe with the Ukraine. And people are asking themselves the question, if he's not really going to lift a finger for Europe, what's he going to do for Australia or Port Kembla? You know, so people feel as if these decisions are made in secrecy, without explanation, and without any realistic, no real attempt to actually explain what the purpose of this is.
But there are a few questions in the chat about the risks of withdrawing. You know, Doug, you mentioned your argument before that Australia should publicly withdraw from the AUKUS agreement. I mean, given who we're dealing with, given the, you know, the volatilities of President Trump, is there a significant risk to Australia, do you think, Doug, from doing that? What would be the potential backlash, I suppose?
I mean, Trump's unpredictable, but I don't think he would declare war on Australia. I mean, of course there's no risk. I mean, what people don't remember is that we've gone in with the US on every piece of warmongering that they've undertaken over the last, 50 years. Even the UK said no, they were not going to Vietnam. Why couldn't we have just said no? We don't want nuclear bombs located in Australia. And we should have just said absolutely not. And this argument that we don't have nuclear bases here, this Marles argument that we've got force rotation and we don't have bases, we're going to have bases here. And how do you ever get rid of those bases in the future? Given that, the US itself seems to be splitting apart domestically, they are totally unreliable. We've got their nuclear weapons based in Australia, and we've got politicians trying to tell us we've got no US bases. This is crazy crap from our government on these issues.
Arthur?
Yeah, look, I'd agree with Doug, obviously, on that, but also to say that if we play this through in terms of scenarios, the notion that one of the most isolated countries in the world at the moment, which is the United States, at this point in time, if you were to look at the strategic situation, it doesn't take a general, I think, to work out that America is on the offensive position in a number of spheres of conflict, and that in the case of Australia's position, both our geographic and our political position in the world, it would be absolute madness to publicly provoke and to what they'd say would be forward deployment or forward defence. In other words, to try and pick a fight, not just with our biggest economic interest and trading partner, but one of the world's superpowers. We know that we can't win that one. What we don't know in the event of a conflict is if the United States would actually do anything. This is the real concern now, and that's why I said earlier that the world has changed since the AUKUS agreement was struck. It was bad then. It's incomprehensible now, because we don't even have the guarantee. We call it a protection racket here that we're paying them, but we're not even sure of the protection here. It leaves just a racket. We're just paying them money here to actually destroy relationships with one of the world's superpowers. And they're, I'm sure, scratching their heads going, why on earth would Australia be even thinking about doing this? It's not as if China has in any way indicated hostile intent here. I don't think we should be naive, though, that obviously there is a battle line here for spheres of influence. But you would think that the best way to deal with that is to actually secure our neck of the woods, which is the Pacific. And that's best done diplomatically, economically, along the questions of growth, not militarism, because we're not going to win with the military approach. And we aren't really sure where America will stand. No one is. Just ask the Ukraine and others. We don't really know. So it makes no sense. And, you know, I think most people are justified in sort of saying that this is fear now. There is no plan B. This is such a radical change that people are too scared to make that leap. And I think that's where we are.